It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where
prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
The headache kicking gonna stop. It's gonna start now. It's gonna run through the summer, and it's.
What's happening? Welcome to Plum Love Foods Live. It's Monday night. It's 10 o'clock on the East Coast, 7 o'clock on the West Coast. And of course, if you're in the middle, kind of in that United States Oreo, if you're the cream in the middle, it's somewhere between 8 o'clock and 7 o'clock. And that's what's up right now, guys. Welcome to Plum Love Foods Live. My name is Chef Plum, and we are live as live can be. I am sitting down here at the bar in the basement, and I almost didn't make it. Let me tell you what happened. Listen, you ever had one of those days, you know, one of those days where it just seems like nothing's going to kind of go the way you want it to go? Maybe you're waiting to hear from a ton of people, or you can't get something done because you're waiting for somebody to get to the store or get to the restaurant, or produce hasn't shown up yet, or just, you know, a myriad of things. Or maybe, just maybe, you're driving on the highway, you know, the highway where we go 75 miles an hour heading northbound on 95 here on the East Coast, and your car just stops. Yep, the engine just stops. Well, that was me about 2 hours ago. Let me tell you what, I was 35 miles away from the house, which doesn't sound like much unless you live in this area, you would understand that. But the way it works is about 35 miles away from the house, I'll tell you what, the engine just stops in the car, and because it just stops in the car like that, you have to pull over to the side of the road. So I pulled over. Thankfully, we got to a rolling stop, I guess is what you would call it, a rolling stop, where then we had to kind of get out of the way, put the emergency lights on, and let the entire world know then that we had to wait for 2 hours. Yes, guys, that's right. 2 hours is what they were saying it was going to take for a tow truck to get to me. It seemed a little bit crazy at the time, but honestly, once it happened and they finally got to us, they never got to us. I don't know. Once it happened and they told me it's going to be 2 hours, I kind of accepted the fact that it was going to take that long to make that happen. You know, it's just the way it goes. So I ended up taking an Uber back so I could get here to be at the bar in the basement to make the show happen tonight. You know, it's the things that we do, you know. You have to constantly keep fighting, and no matter what happens, make sure things get done. And like I told the Uber driver who gave me a ride home from the side of 95 in his Toyota Prius, and let me tell you something, I never thought that I would be a Toyota Prius guy, but to ride in this guy's car, hell, that might be my next car. That thing runs pretty good, man. It's not bad. It's not bad at all. So honestly, it's one of those nights where I made it. I'm here. I just popped the top on a Blue Point toasted lager, an American style amber lager, that is, to enjoy a beverage while we do this show tonight. Thankfully, no one got hurt. Everything's safe. Everything is good. They're towing the car to my local place that I take it to. And I have a feeling, guys, I have a pretty good feeling that they are going to tell me that the head gasket is blown on the Hyundai. Yes, I think that's probably going to be the case. And if that's the case, that's fine. There are so many more worse things in life than that. So, I've been without a car payment for a long time. So maybe it's probably time to have to suck it up and deal with it. But like I said, there's worse things in the world. One of the worst things in the world is tonight's guest. That's right, guys. How about that for a segue? And I'm just kidding. Tonight, we're talking to one, the only, Mr. Chef Mark Henry. Now, Chef Mark is a really, really good dude, man. I met him in New Orleans, and I've never seen a gentleman take apart a pig as fast as I watched him do this. He put headphones on, a crazy-ass beanie hat, and I think he was listening to old Wu-Tang, and this dude took apart this pig. It was unbelievable. It really was something to see. I mean, this dude, he crushed it. It was awesome. We hung out a lot. We had some drinks together. We had some lunch together. We did a competition together. We just kind of became buddies, man. We ended up working our stations across the way from each other. And you know, this guy is a great dude. Glad I can call him friends. He had Chef Brother Luck, last week's guest, with him. And you know, looking forward to having a conversation with him tonight. We'll talk about it, too. He got in a pretty bad motorcycle accident not too long ago. And he's still laid up a little bit. And, you know, it's a shame to see a guy like this who's such an amazing chef, you know, have to sit on the sidelines for a little bit. But look, everybody goes on IR. It's not a bad thing. It happens to everybody. It happens to the best of them. We just have to get you back out there when you're healthy. That's what it's all about. Yeah. Wow. Wow. How about that? It sounds like I did all that in one breath, doesn't it? It wasn't all one breath. It sounded like it was, but it wasn't all one breath. Although, I guess maybe I should say it was. It made me sound more impressive. You know, I want to talk a little bit tonight, just a little bit tonight, about charity events. You know, because doing what I do as a private chef, I give... and a caterer, you know, you give things for charities, for auctions, for things of that nature that support a cause, and you know, people bid on it to have you come to their house and cook for them, and you know, catertain, the word I like to use, we got from our good friend DJ Barbecue, you know, catertain, and that's a great word for it, because that's exactly what I do. But you know, when you do these things, I think that so one of the things that I do is I usually generally say not a Saturday night, because you know, that's one of my busiest nights. I'm doing an event or something, so it never fails though. Whenever if someone wins one of these, they want to do a Saturday night, and it's tough, man, because you lose money, and you know, they usually tip you still, so you make a little something there and on it. But you know, you honestly don't make money when you do a charity event, and you have to bring help with you. It costs you more money, but I just don't know how I feel about it these days. I'd love to hear what you guys think about it, because honestly, you want to do this. They're great. It's good to do. It's good to get your name out there, because the people who go to such events and bid obviously have money, and that's the people you want, the clientele you want to talk to. But when they want to take away your Saturday night, it's a little bit strange, a little bit rough, man. Because you have a night where you'd make, you know, a nice paycheck for yourself, and those of you who cater know what I'm talking about. You do well. But when someone wants to book one of these events on a Saturday night, even when you say you don't do that, you know, but I don't know. Maybe I'm just a sucker. Maybe it's my fault. Maybe I should be more stringent on that and say, no, I don't do Saturday nights for, you know, charity giveaways. It's a Monday through Thursday type deal. That's probably the answer. What do you guys think? I don't know. It's one of those things where it just seems you don't want to be the dick who doesn't do it, because no one likes that guy. But you don't want to be, you know, you don't want to overdo it, I guess, because I don't think you gain as much out of it. I'm just talking purely business-wise, you know, taking the emotional aspect out of it. But you don't gain nearly as much as you would, you know, not nearly as much as you would, as you might get doing other types of advertising and whatnot. So, you know, I guess it's just more, I don't know. Am I a dick? Am I terrible? I mean, I don't think so. I think we all try to make business. We try to make things happen. But at some point, you got to kind of put the foot down, you know? I mean, Chef, what's his name? Chef 48 Underfoot, whatever that means, on Twitter says, no, but you have to do your business, but you don't want to sound like an asshole. That's what I'm saying. You don't want to. You don't want to be an asshole. But I don't know. I think maybe it's limiting the events is what it is, and putting more rules behind it for yourself. You know, putting more rules is the wrong word. More guidelines. More, you know, listen, we'll do this. Specifically me, I would do this, but it's definitely Monday through Friday. Even after they call you and they say, hey, we really want to do a Saturday night, you got to be able to say, I'm sorry, we can't. And I think that's kind of what I have to do. Because, listen, you're going to get a little publicity out of it. You do. You do get a little publicity. I don't think it really equates to the cost of the event. But I guess it's how much do you care about that? You know, do you care that it doesn't do that? Is it important? I don't know. I mean, to me, I think you want to help the event. You want to help out a cause, like, honestly. And yeah, you can get into the whole, it's tax deductible, it's a tax write-off. And look, all those things are great when it's a significant amount of money. But when you're going to go to a party for six people for $1,000, that's not like a significant chunk of change, you know, as far as taxes go. I mean, you keep track of it. But, you know, listen, I'm doing a thing now for what I drive. I'm not giving them a plug or anything like that, but it's called Mile IQ. It goes on your phone. It keeps track of everything for all your mileage. It's fantastic. And they say that, you know, you got to keep track of that stuff. And I never thought much about it, but it does add up. So I guess the point is maybe doing all this sort of things do add up, and keeping track of them is a good thing. Yeah, maybe that's it. Well, I guess, you know, it's kind of like where I met old Chef Mark. We did this event. We didn't get paid to go to the event in New Orleans, but we were there. They obviously paid for our travel and took care of us when we got there, but they didn't, you know, pay for us to you know, give us money for doing the event, which, you know, was an event, and they made money at. They sold tickets, which is pretty smart. You know, in the end, it probably cost them $10,000 to bring all the chefs in to be a part of it, but they probably made, you know, $35,000 doing the event. So I guess it's promotion. It's a promoter. That's what promoters do. I mean, when I do pop-up dinners, I'm a promoter. You know, I front the money for the event and I make it back on ticket sales. So you're banking on yourself to sell all your tickets. That's a promoter. That's promotion itself right there. That's exactly what it is. And that's what it's all about when you're doing events like that. So I guess, but you have to have a following for it, which I guess goes back to the whole charity stuff, you know. I guess you can hope to build your following through these. I think the key thing here is when you do these charity events and you're submitting things to be a part of the charity event, or people ask you to be a part of it and ask you if you can donate something, I think you should. You should do it, but you should be at the event. You should be able to go there and help talk to people and be a part of the event. I think that's kind of the key thing here. I think that might be what I'm a little bitter about. You know, these events I get asked to donate to, but no one ever asked me to come. Why not? What's the story about that? I'm a fun guy. People like to laugh when I talk. I don't know. Am I that much of an asshole? Maybe. I don't think so. Well, check it out, guys. Tonight, we got a really cool guest coming on. We're going to talk to the one, the only, my buddy, Chef Mark Henry. What a great guy. He's a really good, he's like the charcuterie king of Colorado, man. The guy knows all about meats. He knows all about charcuterie. He knows all about smoking meats. It's what this guy does, and we're happy to have him on and talk about it tonight. He's also was on that show, Cooks versus Cons, which I'm sure he'll tell us all about, because he told me a lot about that one. I've never done that particular show, but it's kind of one of the newer ones on the network. But a lot of people are doing it these days. It's you know, Mark's one of those guys that didn't take it too seriously. You know, too many guys will go on these shows and I'll talk about it with Mark a little bit. They go on these shows, like, this is my big break. I'm on the Food Network. Newsflash. You and 900 other people have done those shows. Nobody cares. No one gives a shit. They don't. No one gives a fuck. They don't care if you've been on there. They don't care if you've been on Chopped or anything. I mean, it's fun while you're there. Enjoy the moment and use it to grow your business. But get it out of your head that it actually means anything more than that to anybody else. Because that's all it is. Especially the network. Trust me. They don't care. They see hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of chefs pull through there. That's the God's honest truth right there. Not trying to be a dick, but that's just the truth. It's what it is, you know? So hopefully Mark will talk a little bit about that and what he's done. He's also done some other competitions, so I look forward to talking a lot about that with my man, Chef Mark Henry. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm catching my breath after being out and rushing to get back here and riding in the slowest Uber ever in my life. And I tell you, riding in said Uber, it almost made me tired. It did. It almost made me really tired. You know what I needed, which would have helped my entire trip? You know, if I had gotten myself a nice cup of coffee, that would have helped my slow Uber ride. It kind of would have been nearly as draining If I had some nice Birds of a Feather Coffee Company, that's right, small batch craft coffee roasters out of Tampa, Florida. These guys are awesome. They're using the highest quality specialty grade beans. Their blends are complex and approachable and always roasted fresh. Whatever you get from these guys, they're roasting in small batches, not giant vats of stuff, small batches of coffee, and you'll get it from them that way, so you know it was roasted fresh when you got it. I tell you what, one of my favorite blends I'm using from these days is the Night Owl blend. It's deep and rich, and it highlights the caramel sweetness in the cocoa with like some molasses undertones. This coffee is outstanding. I could have used some tonight, riding in the slowest Uber of all time. We're on the highway. The guy's doing 45 on the highway, dude. Pick up the pace. It's Interstate 95. It's a corridor. Pick it up. You got to go fast here. I'll tell you what, you can get more Bird's Eye Coffee from birdscoffeecompany.com. They even have monthly subscriptions you can sign up for, so you're never run out of your favorite. Once a month, twice every 3 months, whatever you need to get, they can take care of you there. Make sure you check them out, birdscoffeecompany.com. They are awesome. The coffees are fantastic. And let me tell you something, what we're going to do, we are going to get a contest going for the coffee. So you got to get yourself some, right? Get some coffee. Who doesn't like coffee? And Bird's Coffee Company is going to take care of that for us. They are going to make sure that we have some coffee to give away. So check them out. Birds of a Feather Coffee Company. Stay tuned to Instagram. We are going to do a contest. You can win yourself a pound of coffee from these guys. And I'm sure you can pick. You want the Night Owl blend? You can get that. You want that Morning Lark blend, that bright and honeyed sweetness one they got? They got that one too. I think you can pick whatever you want. Make sure you check them out. BirdsCoffeeCompany.com. All right, guys. Check it out. I'm going to take a breather right here. Get my beer situated. Wipe the sweat from my brow and get ready to talk all about this meat with one of the coolest cats that you're going to meet here on this show. You're checking out Plum Love Foods Live. I'll check you guys out in just 1 second. Hang tight.
And during the few moments that we have left, we want to talk right down to earth in a language that everybody here can easily understand.
Yeah. 3-6, Mafia.
Yup. Whoa. Hey, yeah. Whoa. Hey,
say what?
Hey, whoa.
3-6, Mafia.
Whoa.
It's going down.
Whoa.
Y'all know what time it is.
Whoa.
We ain't playing with you.
Hey.
In the club.
Hey.
In the street.
Whoa.
That's right. Coming back in here live right now. I don't know if that was the right intro song to bring Mark in here, but, you know, y'all know I got my little old school affinity for pro wrestling. That's up.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hey, guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun, too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino-style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere, and each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
The old sexual chocolate, Mark Henry. That's his intro music right there. That's the one he's using now. This guest I'm going to bring up right now, I tell you what. You know, you think of what epitomizes a chef. I think our guest tonight really does. And he's a fantastic cook. He's a fantastic chef. He is a beast when it comes to breaking down any kind of animal you got on the planet. And believe it or not, he's a pretty good human being all around, too. He really is. A lot of fun, a guy to hang out with. And ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Mark Henry. Chef, what's going on?
What's going on, my man? How you doing, buddy?
I am good, brother. I am, you know, I talked to you a little bit ago. I'm fucking trying to recover from being stuck on the side of a highway, trying to get hit by cars. Thankfully, I got out and I caught one of them. It was coming about 65. I caught it and moved it out the way so it didn't hit my car. But I'm doing good, brother. How about yourself?
I'm doing all right, man. Doing all right. Having fun getting ready to sit here and bullshit with you all night long, talk about some food. I haven't been able to in a little bit, so I'm looking forward to it for sure.
Well, dude, before we get into all that shit, man, I'm going to talk about what happened to you, man, because you were in a fucking crazy car accident, man. I saw it, and I was like, it's bad when your friends look at something like that and go, fuck, well, at least you didn't die, you know?
You know, when I woke up, I said, well, fuck, at least I didn't die, so I feel you.
There you go, there you go. I felt terrible for you, man. Tell us what happened.
So, going to meet my broker, you know, looking at some spaces for a potential new restaurant, and watched this car back out of a parking spot in a gas station parking lot, and then she proceeded to pull directly out into traffic, trying to cut two lanes of traffic and take a left across two oncoming lanes. She never slowed down. She never looked up from her phone, and she T-boned me. She ran right into my leg. I was on my motorcycle. She was in a car. Story has it, there was a couple eyewitnesses around that I, this is actually a personal record for me, and you'll get this, Plum, because you know me. I went 8 to 10 feet in the air and did 2 somersaults, so fucking right on, right?
Well, I mean, you are, apparently, I look at you, I definitely think, like, gymnast when I see you. That's what I definitely think.
Yeah, you know, and all my training really came into play that moment right then and there. I landed right back on the motorcycle. I bounced forward, went through the windshield on my bike, landed flat on my back, and I woke up in the hospital, had surgery the following day. I ended up breaking some toes, some bones in my foot, shattered my ankle, had an emergency surgery on my ankle, broke 5 ribs, busted my sternum, had a slight lung puncture. spend a couple of days in the hospital, and then I'm actually going to potentially have another surgery tomorrow morning. I meet with my surgeon at 9 a.m. to see if they can put Humpty Dumpty back together again and if I can continue doing what I do. But, you know, man, it could have been worse. I'm still here. I'll live to cook another day, and really, what more can you ask for?
Damn, man, you've got a good outlook on it, too. I could just, I mean, obviously, like, she got the ticket and, like, is you know, going to go to court here, right?
You're goddamn right.
I mean, goddamn, dude. I mean, literally, like, I didn't know it was quite that bad. What's that? I mean, the sternum breaking, that just sounds painful as shit.
You know, with all the injuries that I've sustained, actually, I don't think any of them are as bad as the ribs. I shattered 5 ribs in my back, very close to my spine. Thank God I didn't fuck my spine up. But man, those ribs, I'll tell you, that is the worst goddamn pain I've felt in my entire life. If I ever get in another physical altercation with somebody, they piss me off to the point I'm going to put hands on them. I'm knocking your ass to the ground. I'm flipping you over and I'm breaking your fucking ribs because you will not forget it.
Damn. I guess because every time you breathe, even it probably just, it's just a nightmare.
Yeah, bro. Hiccups, a sneeze, a cough, a yawn. I mean, it is almost shit in your pants. Surprising pain.
Oh my God, man. So how are you? Like, this was, I mean, this is what, about a month ago now?
No, this actually, it was 2 weeks ago today.
Are you shitting me?
Yeah, it was 11:50 in the morning on September 19th.
And you were on the phone talking to me. You're hanging out with the girl. Like, holy shit, dude. Like, I'm surprised you're not still in the hospital.
I spent 3 days in there, and I couldn't take it anymore. I asked them if I could get out. They brought me some crutches. I said, yeah, that ain't going to work. They put me in a walker. I said, well, that ain't going to work. And they said, well, then you're staying here. I said, bring me the fucking walker. We're going to make it happen. So I spent about a week on a walker, moving very minimally, but got to go home, hang out with my kids and my wife, and you know, got to see some of my cooks and the crew from the restaurants been to the house and been super supportive. And I borrowed a wheelchair, and it's like a new lease on life, man. I can get out and about and do some things. And I've been cooking with my kids at home. So life goes on, man. That's what we do as chefs. We adapt and overcome.
No, what are they saying ETA-wise for you, like so you can, like, be on your feet again?
They said it's going to be 6 to 9 weeks for my ribs to heal, and it's going to be 10 to 12 weeks before I can put any weight on my foot. So I'm looking about Thanksgiving time before I can be back in action.
Wow. Well, man, I'm glad that it's not worse, and I'm not trying, I got to be serious for a minute, of course, but I'm seriously glad that you're still here, and that's fucking crazy. I'm glad for your kids that you're still here, and wow, bro, that's insane, and I feel nothing, I wish I could help you. I mean, nothing we can do, but thank God you're alive, you're okay, and you're still the fucking asshole, so that's all that matters to me.
Yeah, man, you know, I'm still here, and it could have been a hell of a lot worse. Definitely, thanks to hell, I had my helmet on. Yeah, and for everybody that's listening, please stay off your goddamn phone while you're in the car. You know, my kids could have been fatherless over this, and that would have been the real tragedy.
Yeah, absolutely, 100%, man. Definitely, like, don't fucking be on your phone. And I need to not do it, too. I do it sometimes, too. I need to fucking not do that. And my kids call me on it, bro. They really do.
Dude, I do it all the time. I do it all the time. I'll never fucking do it again, I swear to God.
Yeah, I don't think I will either. When you hear one of your good buddies, that was what caused this to happen to you, man. So I'm sorry that happened, but I'm glad you're doing well. But I want to touch on something that you said there. That, I mean, you know, you being a chef as long as you have, you just said it, and you don't think twice about it. But I don't think people quite understand it. We have a lot of young people who check this show out, and you know, you said that you got to see a lot of your cooks. They've been very supportive, and they came over to the house to check on you and stuff like that. You know, I think that's one of the biggest things that we have in this business of what we do. I mean, we are a disbanded, disjointed group of pirates, but we're incredibly loyal. And to have the support like that, man, I mean, you know, these guys are your ride or die, and they're going to be with you no matter what.
Yeah, you know, it's funny you say that. I had so we got a local cookware store here in town where I'm from, and they've been around forever. All the cooks go in there, and there's a gentleman that owns it, and he's a little bit older, you know, 55-ish, older than me anyway, and his mother's always been there. Well, she passed just 2 days ago. And I reached out to him and I said, hey, Alan, his name's Alan Epley. He owns Sparrowhawk Cookware here in Colorado Springs. I said, hey, Alan, if you need anything, man, you let me know. You know, your mom was always there. She watched us come up through the ranks in the industry. And, you know, she's a part of this industry as much as you are. And we're all a family. You know, teamwork makes a dream work. You know, that's how we operate in this industry. And that's what makes it so goddamn great.
Yeah, and you're right, man. I think that's what – but outsiders look and they see – you know, even just looking, think about us in New Orleans. You got, you know, I'm 6'3 with a fucking blue mohawk. You know, you're there with your big beard and you're chewing tobacco in your mouth. And, you know, Brother Luck's not a lot of little guy either. We're a group of guys. We walk into your restaurant, we could, or your bar, these guys could be a problem. But it's completely the opposite. We probably have the most respect for what you're doing out of anybody, you know?
Yeah, man. I mean, we grew up, you know, and this industry is as much as we of us as anything else is. And, you know, looking back at it and, you know, being a jackass when you're younger in the kitchen or younger in the industry to, you know, where we are now and taking it as serious as we do, you know, it becomes a part of you and it really affects how you behave and, you know, the regard that you hold it in. And it means so much to all of us, I think. It's great to see.
You're right. And I think we're seeing almost, I don't want to say the word resurgence, but we're really kind of starting to see a new, especially just doing this silly little fucking radio show and talking to all the cooks that I talk to. And to me, the word cook is not a bad word, as some people think it is.
I tell people all the time, I'm just a cook. You know, they come in, they want to bullshit about Food Network and this and that and fucking stroke your dick. And that's cool, man, but nobody gives a fuck. I'm just a cook at the end of the day, one plate at a time. I'm taking the world over, and that's my mantra.
Yeah, absolutely. You're only as good as the last one you put out, man. You're absolutely right. I mean, you know, I think one of the biggest things I took away from what I thought was interesting about the whole True Cooks thing, that, you know, his big mantra is, you know, Chad's mantra is, you know, from the Waffle House to the White House, like everybody, it's all inclusive. And the more and more you talk to people like that, and, you know, because listen, as chefs, as restaurant people, cooks, hospitality people, I mean, it's definitely a group of people that's a hard shell to crack. You know, when we were in New Orleans together, you had this room full of cooks who were all hanging out. We all cook great food. We're all there to do the same thing. But everybody's weird for a few minutes at first. You know, no one, everybody's very standoffish for a few minutes, you know? But then...
Yeah, you got that dick measuring contest.
Exactly. But then what happens an hour later, you and I are drinking beers, making jokes, being stupid. Next thing you know, we're cooking for whatever, 300 people, whatever it was, across from each other, just fucking trying to make each other laugh all day long. That's what it becomes. It's just
right?
That respect level.
And then we culminate the night at a fucking gay bar. I mean,
what else would you do?
I mean, that's the story. That's the fucking story right there.
Dude, I know. We really went to a gay bar, but like, I don't care. Whatever. We were there. And they had some fucking crazy vodka, like with fruit infused and shit hanging from the bar. And I think, was it you and I talking and I just looked up, or one of us looked up, we're like, you know what, there's no chicks in here.
No, we were sitting down before we went out on the patio. We're sitting down in the patio or in the bar area, and I says, Flo, what the fuck is with all these walls in here? And then we started noticing that there's walls and doors everywhere, and there's not a single chick in the place except for one lonely one sitting at the end of the bar. And you send your damn sous chef down there to crack the ice while we all figure out we're in a gay bar.
Yeah, it was funny, though.
Oh, it's great. I mean, that's how you start a story, you know, this one time at the gay bar.
Well, I think the whole story starts with, well, so we went to New Orleans with a bunch of fucking guys we never met before. And next thing you know, we all end up in a gay bar drinking together. It's awesome. And then what do you and I and Eric do? We ended up across the street at the gay burger joint.
Yeah, and it was a damn good burger.
It was a good fucking burger, man. It was a good burger. I was surprised. It wasn't bad. You know, although we had been drinking in a long fucking day, too. So maybe whatever we ate would have been fine.
Man, I'll tell you, that travel home was rough. Brother Luck, he's got a picture of me on his phone. He took me. He was sitting two rows ahead of me on the plane. I'm passed out, and you can just see the guy behind me is just pissed off because I am snoring, and it sounds like a logging company is on this plane, man. I was hungover for 2 days.
Hell yeah. But, you know, I think that, you know, just to segue a little bit into those competitions and stuff, you know, I always talk about it with guys like you who have experience, who have done these things, and, you know, and I've done them as well. And to me, I think that's the big takeaway from doing those competitions. The fact that I'm on the doing the show and talking to you right now and talking shop and just running our mouths. And, you know, it's because we did that competition together. It's because we bonded over that. We had that opportunity. And I think that's what it's about.
Yeah, man. Those things. Yeah, you know, competitions are great, and it's definitely an eye-opening experience to think about, you know, going back through your career, all the competitions. I know I've done a ton of them. You know, the first few I did, I remember the first one I ever went to, I was like, fuck, I'm going to win this. And I couldn't tell you anybody that I competed with. And then, you know, flash forward 10 years to this one that we just did in New Orleans. I hardly remember the dish that I did, but I remember all the people, you know, and I talked to those people a bunch, and I didn't even really give a shit about the competition. But, you know, the camaraderie and the networking and, you know, branding, you know, it's great. You know, as you become more seasoned in the industry, those competitions, you know, have different value on you. But I think they're good. You know, whatever stage of your career you're in, they definitely have a value and bring something to the table.
That's a good way to put it, man. The value that they have. I've never thought about it like that. That's a great way to put it. I mean, it has value. I mean, you've been on this show,
man,
before.
I've never been to New Orleans.
Yeah,
I didn't have to pay to go there.
And it was awesome, right?
Yeah, it was great. That was my intention behind the whole thing was, you know, doing the whole Facebook social media vote thing was, hey, I want to go to New Orleans. Everybody fucking vote for me, and I'll cook when I'm there, and I'll see if I can make you all proud. And, you know, at the end of the day, making it there, I think, made everybody proud enough that I was able to go, not have to pay for it, and fuck off.
Well, your dish was
great.
I'm good
at fucking off.
Your dish was awesome, though. I mean, that's the thing. You go to an event like this, they got local chefs there. I've learned if there's, like, local people doing their thing, serving what they're used to eating, you know, you joke with me. I did a ceviche dish in fucking New Orleans, like, you know, but whatever. You know, the guy who does shrimp and grits obviously is going to win. You know, that's what they eat there. I live in the Northeast. They eat what I mean. It's different, you know? Although, I got to tell you, brother, when they said, when they asked the crowd to line up, when we were all lined up, they said, who should win People's Choice? There was a nice, very strong chant for ceviche. It was awesome.
Well, you know, it was fresh. It was a good dish, you know, and that was the cool thing there was, there was a lot of great food that got put up there. I mean, thinking back to that event, you know, Brother Luck and I, you know, obviously we worked together, and we've mentioned it a few times. Leanne Wong and Jeff Shear there, they did a fucking baller dish.
Awesome.
And kudos for them. I would never do anything like that in a competition. You know, they put their nuts right on the table for everybody to see, and they pulled it off, and it was, you know, it was awesome.
No doubt. No doubt. You're fucking totally right about that. That was fucking, I mean, when you say put your nuts on the table, it's exactly what they did. We were like, we're going to fry.
I mean, they're frying fucking quail to order. Come on.
I know, dude.
Fuck that shit. Hey, guys, we're going to set you at a table that you've never worked at before. We're going to give you equipment you don't know, and we want you to fry to order. Yeah, cool, I'm out. Fuck off. She chose to do that, and she pulled it off.
She killed it, man. And how cool is she to hang out with? She was awesome.
Oh, man, you know, all the people down there that we met, it was, you know, it was a great fucking crew, and that's what it's about. And it was, you know, obviously we didn't have to pay to get down there. You know, I think looking back on it, knowing what I know now, if I had to pay to go out there and get the same experience, I'd probably do it.
But, you know, I think a lot of competitions, when you go in with a mentality like that, that we just talked about, you know, after you're there and you experience it, I think, you know, a lot of you probably would pay to go be a part of, you know?
Yeah, I probably won't ever do that event again, truth be told, but I would go to it again to hang out with all the chefs.
Ah, shit. Why don't you guys just do it backwards next year and Brother Luck goes and you go as his assistant?
Maybe. Shit. You never know, man. That's the beauty about our industry and you know, working with another great chef is, you know, the camaraderie that we have and as closely as we work together, you never know where you're going to end up. We've had such a fucking stellar year that you never know where you're going to end up or where this industry is going to take you. And it's so cool to see because getting into this industry, that's not why any of us got into this industry was to see the world and see where it took us. We all thought we were going to be fucking line cooks forever. Otherwise, we're going to be in prison.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I would agree with that completely. You know, it's funny you bring that up because
there's still time.
Listen, We can still bucket list that motherfucker. Hang in there. we haven't even talked about where you work yet. We just, you know, just kind of got going, which is part of the reason why I think you and I got along so well is we just fucking talk, and you know, it's just real talk. And I haven't even talked about where you work yet and how you work with Brother Luck and all that stuff. And you know, you guys work together.
Yeah, so I work at a place called Brother Luck Street Eats. Brother Luck, that is his real name. He's a great chef, and he opened a restaurant here about 3 years ago, and it started growing, and he needed some help, and I needed a job. And he and I have been friends for a few years before that, so I called him up and ended up getting a job working at his restaurant. And about a year, you know, 6 months to a year later, I ended up getting promoted to executive chef because the business was expanding, and, you know, he needed to focus on expansion and getting the next project going. And I run the kitchen for him. Obviously not right now. I can't do shit from a wheelchair, so he's protecting my helm. But yeah, we're down here in Colorado Springs, about an hour south of Denver. And, you know, we both just love food and love life and love Colorado and enjoy each other's company. And, you know, it's taking us to high places right now, and it's great.
I mean, you guys really are two of the coolest cats I've met. And the reason why the dynamic to me was so cool about you guys is like, everything was equal. You know, there's no, you know, when you guys were in New Orleans, it was definitely hanging with you guys and talking to you, there was no like, you know, okay, I'm the chef and he's the sous chef. It was definitely like, you know, we're in this together. We're here for Brother Luck Street Eats, and this is what we do, and we do our thing. And which to me, that's awesome. And you don't see that very much anymore. Being chefs, we have low self-esteem. You know, we're very, very, very protective over our spot, but you guys were really, really cool with each other.
Yeah, well, you know, a lot of that comes from, I think, you know, Brother and I had a pretty good relationship going into us working together, and then coming in to work with him and for him, you know, at the end of the day, he is still my boss. Sure. I think it developed into, you know, we had a friendship, and, you know, now, you know, the guy's pretty much my best friend. You know, when I wrecked my motorcycle and I woke up in the hospital room, I look up and here's this 6'2", half black, half white, beautiful motherfucker with a better name than Madonna standing in my hospital room, making sure I'm okay. And, you know,
okay, wait,
he gets my motorcycle back down to my house.
Let that sink in for a minute, because that was a damn good ass description. Just hang on. That was awesome.
That's Brother, man. 6'2", half black, half white, gets his hair done every week. Beautiful, beautiful son of bitch, doesn't have a blemish on his face or anywhere on his skin that I know of. And he's just a beautiful guy. He's, you know, the thing about Brother too is he's fucking real. He's a great guy. You know, he'd take a bullet for me if I needed him to. And, you know, he's just a good guy. And my career this year has really exploded, and he's been right there to not only push me and to help me get where I've made it to, but, you know, to be a part of it and to help me. And, you know, I can't say enough good things about the guy. I love him to death. He's, you know, he's family. He's just a great guy.
Man, that's really awesome. I mean, I tell you what, there's nothing like in the world. There's nothing better in the world than having the respect of your peers. And I think that's one of the things you guys have with each other. And it's a really cool thing to see. When you guys were in New Orleans, it was definitely a well-oiled machine. And, you know, I talked about it before you came on. I was putting you over. And I was talking about, I've never seen a man take apart a pig so fast in my life. Dude, you got skills when it comes to that shit. You came in with a hat on, some headphones on, playing some old Wu-Tang, and you took a pig apart faster than any man I've ever seen. Where'd you learn that shit?
You know, I did some work a couple years back, and ended up going out to Charleston, South Carolina to stage with a guy.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With everything you have on your plate, earning your degree online seems impossible. But at Grand Canyon University, we specialize in helping you fit a master's degree in business into your busy day. Your graduation team, led by your own GCU counselor, provides you with the personal support you need to succeed. Achieve your goals with a plan and team behind you. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Visit gcu.edu.
Guy that I still hold in a super high regard. His name's Chef Craig Deal. He's the executive chef for Cypress Restaurant Group out there, and he's a fucking badass. And I walk into this dude's kitchen, and he doesn't know me from Adam, and we spend the next week together breaking down animals and doing all this crazy shit. And, you know, I go back to Colorado. I'm getting ready to open a charcuterie restaurant, and I look at my sous chef, and I says, man, I thought I knew what we were doing, and this guy, Craig, showed me a whole different world, and I have no idea what the fuck we're doing, but this is how we're going to do it from now on. And we just started buying whole animals and started, you know, forging relationships with local farmers and producers out here and practicing. You know, one of my things is with my cooks, I tell them all the time, and this is how I got to where I am, is you ain't fucking up, you ain't trying. So I fucked up a lot of carcasses and practiced a lot and built some great relationships with some guys, you know, that raise them and obviously, you know, run a slaughterhouse to process their own animals, and I spent some time there, and you know, I worked at a meat packing company and ran a kill floor for a while. It was just something that really, really interested me, because you know, I got three little girls, and at some point I'm gonna be too broken to do this shit, man, and I don't want to be stuck eating McDonald's. So it's all about teaching the next generation, and in that comes, you know, local food. And it's been such a huge surge in the last, you know, 5-10 years now. And anybody can go and drop a seed in the ground and grow a fucking carrot. That interests me none whatsoever. You know, when I was growing up, wow, and I fucked up, my mom made me weed or garden. I hate gardening. Wow. I don't garden. My wife does it. Brother does it. I let them handle that shit. But looking at local food, it was like nobody wanted to fuck with local meats. And I was like, shit, nobody's shooting at me this time. I'll take the hit, and I'll take one for the team, and I'll do the meats. So I started buying whole animals and breaking them down and figuring it out. And thankfully, I've been blessed and figured it out, man. And I love it. It's a fucking blast.
Well, dude, even I was thinking just as far as like just from a restaurant standpoint, from a food cost standpoint, it probably saves you a lot of money to do it that way.
Oh, fuck yeah. Man, I'll tell you what. You go on any of the big box purveyors, depending on where you are. You know, out here, we've got Sysco, Shamrock, U.S. Foods. You know, mm-hmm. you buy a case of pork chops or a case of pork loins, you're going to pay $7, $8, $9, $10 a pound, depending on the time of the year and, you know, how the market's looking. Or you can buy a whole fucking pig for $2.65 a pound and make it happen. And that's what we do as chefs, is, you know, use the whole animal, show respect to that animal, and, you know, make sure it's profitable so that we can continue to do what we do.
You know, I was just at a farm. You've seen what I'm doing with the Edible Magazine project I do.
It's pretty awesome.
Oh, I appreciate that, man. It's I'm all about local stuff, and that's, you know, I firmly believe that with these farmers and these people who make amazing foods, if we don't take care of them, we're going to lose them. And I think anything I can do to help that, and that was the whole genesis of this thing, to be able to show these guys and show the world, look what we have. Let's go talk to these guys. And I went to a farm called the Hickories out here in Connecticut where I live. And they have produce, obviously. Everybody does produce. But they also do sheep, goats, and obviously chickens and pig. And you can go there and you can buy one. And they do a whole meat CSA for like even like people who don't, you know, who aren't chefs, who want to just support local stuff. They can get a local meat CSA. And dude, the price is fucking crazy. It's nothing. It's fucking nothing. It's like $400 for the year.
Yeah, that's the thing. Is that's what people don't understand, is eating local and eating right and eating good foods is not as expensive as we've been led to believe.
Especially in this day and age, man, it's really completely. And I think that you know, doing the things that you're doing out where you live is showing people that. I mean, I'm sure it's something you guys talk about, getting whole animals. You guys obviously market that, right?
Oh, we have a whole hog mural on our wall, and we have an open kitchen. People get to see it happen, and we've actually, about a year ago, we have a big stainless steel prep table that's like 4 foot tall out in the dining room. We use it as a community table. Last year, I did a class where we promoted it online, and we had people come in, and I broke a whole hog down in the dining room. We packed the fucking restaurant out. Everybody was there and broke the pig down and auctioned it off, you know, while we were there. We paid for the pig and then some, and everybody got to take good pork home, and people are still talking about it. You know, that's what it's all about, is educating, giving back to the community, and supporting these farmers. Because you're right, if we don't protect them and include them, we're going to lose them. And then what do we got? Nothing.
Yeah, then we got nothing. Then we're all eating fucking forced corn-fed shit that is just, it's not the way it's supposed to be. You know, I love when people, so you live out in Colorado, it's a little bit different, but I live here on the Eastern Seaboard, and people are big into organic fish right now. And let me tell you what, it's the most annoying thing in my life I've ever seen. They're like, well, this is
organic,
you know, is that
organic fish?
Yeah, bro. They're like, is that organic?
What does that mean? It grew up in free range water? What the fuck is that?
Well, no. You know what it means? It means organic salmon. So what it is, it's force-fed organic cornmeal, right? So they can call it organic. To me, organic fish would be something I'm out there with a rod and reel and I fucking catch and bring it in from the ocean. That's organic.
Yeah.
But no.
You know,
they wanna,
food
it's crazy.
Food is food, and chefs are cooks. If we could get rid of all these stupid fucking taglines that everybody's putting on everything and catchphrases and just get to the root of what we're doing and appreciate it for what it is, we'd all be better. I mean, bottom line, get rid of all that extra bullshit. You don't have to shop at Whole Foods. It doesn't make you better than me. It doesn't make you worse than me. Let's just fucking eat and enjoy it and enjoy the time around the table with your family and friends and spend the time with food that it deserves to have spent on it.
See, look, you're ending my show right now. That's how I end every show, with saying that shit, bro. That's exactly what it is. And, you know, you look at these places like Whole Foods and stuff. I was there about 2 weeks ago at a Whole Foods here locally, and I asked them where something came from. And they said, oh, it's local. It's from Maine. Bro, Maine is 300 miles away from me.
Yeah. You know, that's the thing is, a lot of people, you know, they don't give food the credit that it deserves. And, you know, for me, you know, my mom died about a little over a year ago, and she's really where I started cooking. We cooked the entire time I was growing up, and she taught me damn near everything I know about food until I got into the industry professionally. But now she's gone, and all I have left of her are those memories and the food that was around to help create those memories. And why we're not spending more time focusing on stuff like that and thinking about things like our diet and, you know, can our diet help with some of these diseases that are running rampant in our country and in our society and, you know, provide a better way of life? Why are we not worried about shit like that? But everybody knows when the next iPhone's coming out.
Dude, you are preaching the fucking choir. You're absolutely right. Hey, you should check out, I did an episode of Edible on a place called Wave Hill Breads. And this is going to be very controversial, what I'm about to tell you, right? Wave Hill Breads, it's here in Connecticut. It's run by a guy named Chef Tim. He is about as old school as you can get. Chef, this dude gets organic grains brought in, right? Grains are just grown the way they're supposed to be grown. He mills his own grains in the bakery. Right? He mills the grains, and that's what he makes his breads out of. He's not getting flour from King
Fuck
Arthur.
Yeah.
And that's what he does. But here's the craziest part. People who have celiac disease, you know, gluten allergies, they can eat his bread
eat
and
it.
Don't have a reaction. They don't have a reaction.
Yeah, we got a guy out here that does that too. Sean Saunders out here in Colorado Springs runs Sourdough Boulangerie, and he's got bread the same way. You know, people come in with celiac and have all these made up or actual legitimate dietary restrictions and can't eat meat or bread or anything, can eat their products and they're blown away. And it's, you know, it's not the food that's causing the problems. It's the bullshit that we as a society have allowed to be put on the foods to treat them.
See, but they'll never ever study it. They'll never study it, dude. They'll never study it and look into it because gluten-free has become such a thing now, as opposed to being a legitimate issue. It's a fucking thing. Where, well,
phrase.
It's a marketing thing. It's a catchphrase. It's a fucking gimmick. So here you have a guy, like you talked about your guy, and the guy I'm telling you about who mills his own, they mill their own grains and makes their own flour. I mean, you don't get much more natural than that. Flour, salt, water. The dude makes a poolish and is poolish and it goes for 2 days before, you know, like making a sour for a sourdough. I mean, the way he does it is the way it's always been done before we started putting shit into it and doing weird things with our bread to make them last longer. And
yeah, you know, the cool thing about it, too, is just like my guy, I bet this guy that you're talking about fucking loves what he's doing. He doesn't have a single employee that walks in like you would have at a Wonder Bread factory that walks in and mindlessly punches their fucking time card and is miserable and hates life. These people love what they're doing and love the things that they're making and the craft that they have. and it just results in such a great product, and there's just not enough support out there for people like that and their products.
You know, this guy has about an 8-foot-long bench, and he told me when I was there he had 3,000 pieces ordered for that day. It's a lot of fucking bread. He goes, no, that's not even a busy day. A busy day would be 4,800, 5,000. He goes, we have 3,800 or 3,500, whatever he said. And he said, but every single piece of bread touches his hand and is on that bench. Every single piece of bread goes through that bench. And I focused on that in the episode because, bro, that's love. That's love of food. That's caring. Every single piece of bread this man does touches that bench. And that's amazing. And to me, that's what it's all about. But I think you're starting to see more of an appreciation for that with people. I think people are, it's slowly happening, you know, the support for it and things like that, but you're starting to see more and more of it kind of happening and people appreciating it. And I think, you know, I'm giving like four things for you to comment on, I know, but as much as I don't like to admit it and say it, and I don't know if you do or not, but it's because of mainstream things like Food Network and Cooking Channel, you know, kind of teaching people, probably not the way I would or you would, but teaching people that stuff's important.
Yeah, you know, Food Network is what it is, man. It's great while you're there. It's good for branding. You know, it's not necessarily about how you do or what you do. It's what you do with those appearances. And
absolutely,
Food Network's great in its own rights. But you know, the cool thing is, like, for me, butchering animals and doing the charcuterie it's nothing new. I'm not doing anything new or groundbreaking. It's just kind of a lost art. And it's the same thing with this bread, you know, that we're talking about. It's not new. It's how it used to be. It's how it should be. And we're seeing all these people, you know, me included, that are getting all this attention for doing things the way that they should be and the way that they used to be in times past, that people are really starting to get back to that appreciation. And you're really seeing it come full circle. So I really hope that, you know, as these trends continue, we as a society and a culture can really harness the greatness that those things bring and keep them around this time, as opposed to having to let them die off for people to want them and have them become important again, you know, 50, 60 years down the road from now. Let's keep this shit around and let's make some improvements on the way that things ought to be done.
Yeah.
Anybody can sous vide a fucking pork chop that comes in a box. We get it, dude. You're cool. Fuck off.
Right.
Cook something.
Dude, yes, that's so fucking funny what you said. We get it. You're cool. You and your both complete sleeves of tattoos of hipster things and your fucking, you know, your trendy chef coat and even sous vide. What are you sous vide? Pork lips now? That's what you're doing? Whatever it is. Got it. Cool. Can you fucking cook?
Yeah.
Can you give me something?
Can you make a fucking hollandaise the way it's supposed to be done, or do you need a Vitamix?
A fucking min. That's what's up right there. You know, I won't let my guys do that. I give them a fucking whisk and a bowl.
Dude, you know, we run brunch at the restaurant, and I've taught every one of the cooks how to make hollandaise, and see the light bulb that goes off. Even these culinary school graduates that come out and don't know how to make a hollandaise by hand, you see this light bulb go off when they do a promotion and they make one of the mother sauces the way that it's supposed to be made. And just to see the doors that opens, you know, that shit is so much cooler than watching somebody go on Food Network and cook on a fucking show and win some bragging rights or some prize money. Like, just fuck off. You've done it. It's great for what it is, but come on.
Right.
You know, I'd rather spend less time off camera and more time in my kitchen training my cooks and seeing what they can do. What kind of cool shit can this cook do with something that I taught him that I never would have thought of, that we would have missed the opportunity on if I was on a fucking TV show instead of in the kitchen where I should have been.
And what's more rewarding than that? Than watching that
happen? It's so cool. You know, coming into work and seeing one of your cooks show up an hour early because they want to try something. Or coming in and they're asking you about something that they read in a book. Nobody ever comes in like, hey man, did you see that latest episode of Cooks vs. Cops? No, nobody fucking cares.
Nobody
fucking cares. But they come in and they're like, hey, I'm reading this book, The French Laundry. Have you ever heard of it? Fuck yes. What do we want to do today? What do you want to do? Let's do it.
Let's fucking do it. Let's fucking do it. You know, I mean, dude, I used to go in when I was working at a Michelin star hotel. I would go in on my day off. I would just show up in the kitchen after the prep list is made. And I would look at what are the couple hardest things to make on the prep list, the most pain in the ass things. And I would just do it and then leave. I mean, that's how you get better. That's what you do. You know?
Yeah. You know, every time I break down an animal, I time myself. Every time I'm trying to get better. And that's what
except
I tell
for New Orleans. In New Orleans, it took you 15 seconds. There's no fucking way you timed that shit. God damn.
It took 23 minutes and 26 seconds. I did time myself.
That's insane. That's insane. That's like, what was it? That was like five songs of 36 Chambers and you were done?
Yeah, it was just a couple songs, man. Put some ODB on and got in the zone, baby. That's what I do. You know, there's something so cool about that, though, is, you know, think about that dish that we did out there. You know, we showed up a day late just like you did. We had no fucking prep time the day before. Mm-mm. And 7-8 hours later, we're standing in a room serving 150, 200, 300 people, however many fucking came through. I don't know. It could have been 6,000, depending on who you ask. we served a whole fucking pig. It was whole that morning. And we served it in a spreadable salami. Come on. That's cool
shit. It was dope, man. And you put fucking pimento cheese on it, right?
Yeah, fast green chili, pimento cheese. We made a doo-ya out of that whole hog. Pickled some nectarines that were fucking way unripe.
Oh,
and,
my God,
a nice little slaw.
So
yeah, man. You say nectarines, and my mouth's watering right now talking about them. It could be the Copenhagen, but I'm pretty sure it's the nectarines. I could have thrown one of them fucking things across the room and killed a baby.
You did. You tossed one to me, and you were like, dude, feel that. And I'm like, fuck, man. That's fucking terrible.
Yeah, dude, I had to sharpen my fucking knife after cleaning them goddamn things. And they're supposedly in season.
I know. Look, but I mean, to give them credit a little bit, just to give them a little bit back, I mean, all that flooding and crazy shit that was going on, like, they were having trouble getting shit. No one could have foreseen that happening, but they should have called you and said, dude, these nectarines are fucking garbage. I want to get something different.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, it is what it is. You can look at it a couple different ways. You could have said, yep, there's flooding going on down south. Cool, your chefs, get the mise en place together. Or you can say, hey, we're chefs, we'll adapt and overcome with the shit that you gave us, and that's what we did. At the end of the day, it was a good event, you know, great networking, and I mean, look at what's come out of it. That's why you and I are on the phone right now. So it could have been worse, it could have been better, but that's every fucking service.
I think it was great, man. I mean, I think it was great for what it was. I mean, I made some friends out of it, you know. I know now if I'm in Colorado, I can give you a shout, I got a place to go. Like, that's my dudes. You and Brother Luck will make sure you look after me. And that's what it's about. You come to New York area, I got you. That's the way it goes. I think that's what the big takeaway is from doing events like that.
Yeah, you know, it was all good. You can't look at events like that and know what you're going to get out of them. And I seriously took a lot away from that event we did in New Orleans. Got some great friendships. Saw some really cool shit. Tasted my first ever fresh part of palm. You know, a lot of cool shit went down in New Orleans, and I wouldn't trade it for the world. I don't know that I'll do it again, but that opportunity and the experiences that we got was fucking awesome.
Well, I tell you what, man, just between you and me and the 5,000 people that download this radio show, I might be the host of it next year.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, possibly. Well, let me ask you what.
Hit me up if you need an MC. I'll come swear.
Well, that's what I'm doing, dude.
Oh, nice. You're going to MC it? Oh, that's going to be fucking hilarious. I might come just to see it.
Hell yeah, dude. But I want to ask you this, and then I'm going to move on from this fucking competition, man. But and just so you know, like, we've already been on the phone for over 45 minutes now. This is how it goes when I talk to you. We just fucking talk food. Listen, and we've fucking solved half the world's problems when it comes to the restaurant business on the phone tonight so far, right?
Right?
It just gets quick, man. You just the coolest thing about this, you just meet people, kindred people, chefs who have been around the block, who have seen shit, just, you know, you instantly respect them. And, you know, that's what I think, especially when I met you, it's exactly what happened. You know, I'm like, this guy's legit, this is the real deal, you know, we'll be buddies. So when you go to a competition like we did in New Orleans, and I'm not going to say any names or anything, I ain't going to out nobody, but, like, you go to this competition, you look at the judging panel, right? And there's some good people who are judges, but inevitably there's going to be one or two who you're like, what the fuck? What is that
yes,
about?
Yeah, absolutely. You know? I'll tell you, I had... I had one of the dumbest fucking questions asked to me with that judging panel that I've ever had in my life.
I've done a lot of competitions.
I've stood in front of a lot of judging panels. I had a judge. Truth be told, I looked at that judging panel, and there was only two people on that judging panel that I knew of or that I really gave a shit about. The rest of them, I didn't know who the fuck they were. So I had a judge without saying any names. Yeah, it's Tory McPhail, and then we had a member of the James Beard Foundation board was there as well.
Yeah. Right, which is great.
Everybody else was you know, not necessarily a no-name, but they just hadn't hit my radar yet.
Let me set you up really quick. You go to this event, and you have some chefs who have a name, and you have some chefs who have a name, you know, and some of the people competing in this particular competition, I mean, dude, yourself, first of all, you and Brother Luck, fucking, are you serious? Leanne Wong? Did they understand who the fuck she is? No, trust me, I can tell you they didn't after talking to them after the fact. Leanne Wong was on Top Chef. We got that. But not only was she on Top Chef and she didn't win.
She was a fucking producer.
She produced seasons fucking 3 through 8.
Like, yeah, she's a big fucking deal. She's still judging Chopped and shit.
I know. You have her there. Nick Kylas, the guy from Boston. That dude is fucking huge. He's done all kinds of shit. But yet, and not tooting my own horn, but I've got a little resume myself. And then you have someone.
Yeah, we have some big swinging dicks there.
Right. And then you bring in someone who was on, out of all the television programs, the one that is kind of considered kind of the joke, you know, and didn't even do that well on it. And she is going to try to talk to chefs like Leanne, chefs like Nick, chefs like yourself and me. And that happened to you. And tell us how that went down. I'm not giving you any names. I might.
So I go up on the stage and I've got this.
Wait, time out, because immediately this happens and you run back and you and your gymnast and Adonis like form run back and tell the story to us, which I thought was fucking great. It was the greatest story I ever heard.
Well, I was blown the fuck away. You know, I'm up on stage and I've got this dish. I've got this dish, and you know, it's presented very well. There's pictures on my Instagram and on Facebook. If anybody's interested, go check them out. It presents very well, and it was a delicious little bite, if I do say so myself. And this judge looks at me and says,
"I'm saying it. It was delicious.
What look were you going for?" I said, "Excuse me." And this particular judge says, "Well, what did you design this after?" And I again said, "Excuse me." And she says, "Well, what is this supposed to look like?" And I looked at her and I says, "I don't design plates. I cook cohesive dishes." And one of the fellow judges sitting on the panel with this particular judge looks at me, it's somebody I hold pretty high regard, looks at me and says, Yeah. And this is the executive chef of Commander's Palace. Tori looks at me and says, "Good answer." And that was good enough for me. So I never really understood what the hell they were asking me. I never really rendered an answer. But, you know, I think questions like that there's a mindset out there that questions like that are okay and are acceptable in our industry. And nobody should design plates. You don't decorate a fucking plate. You build a dish that works together, showcasing ingredients that are in season and, you know, of the region that you cook in. And if it all works together and they elevate one another, that's how you build a dish. You don't build a dish because it looks like a fucking Corvette on a piece of china or anything else, you know. And too many people are doing shit like that, and that's why our industry has ended up in the situation that it's in.
Dude, it was the greatest story ever. And I told you with me when I went up there to put my plate up, she kept talking to somebody in her group of people. Fuck it. It was some fucking bitch from Hell's Kitchen. I don't give a shit. And she was fucking garbage. That bitch probably couldn't even take apart an entire fucking pig.
I don't know if she can or she can't. You know, at
I'm
the end of the day,
she can't. Chef, we have microphones.
I'd much rather
experts.
You know, in a situation like that, I'd much rather, you know, have somebody ask me a question that I'm not educated enough to answer and give them an opportunity to teach me, Or to have somebody humble themselves and say they don't necessarily understand what I did and ask some questions so I can give them, you know, some of the logistics behind what happened, as opposed to, you know, fill in the silence in the air and the confusion that was going on with some horse shit. And that's what it was. It was horse shit. It was filler. And, you know, there's a lot of horse shit and a lot of filler going on with food these days. And it's a shame because food is a beautiful thing.
Well, that same judge asked me after a tour from Commander's Palace, because, wow, there's a lot of flavor going on here. That same judge asked me after I just described a dish, and she spent time talking to whatever one of her people that was with her. She goes, wait, now what is this again? And I said, oh, I just told all these guys. You didn't hear it?
You know, I mean, you should have looked at her and given her the Gordon Ramsay and went, it's raw.
It's raw. It's raw. I just couldn't believe it. Like, listen, I've judged a lot of competitions. As a matter of fact, I'm judging the World Food Competition in Alabama in November. You fucking respect the people who are putting food in front of you. You need to, when that food comes down and they come to present to you, I don't care what's happening. You pay attention to that, and that's what's happening. You respect those people. And I felt immediately that she wasn't respecting that, and I was like, fuck her.
Yep. I can definitely see where you're coming from there. You know, I honestly had forgotten about that interaction until you brought it up tonight.
It's a great story. But look, honestly,
plate design.
Honestly,
fuck off.
That plate design. All right, I was trying to make a fucking B-52. It was delicious.
God damn it.
But she's one of the people that's probably the highlight of her career, what she did there, you know? So that's what I tell myself when I get back to my hotel room. That's probably what her highlight was of her entire career. So, you know, whatever.
You know, dude, and that's great. I'm glad we can be a part of it.
Yeah, and fuck it, whatever. And I'm looking at my timer here, and they're counting me down. I got 19 minutes left before they pull me off the air. And I haven't even touched it. I got so many more questions for you. But we haven't talked yet. We have to. About Cooks versus Cons. This is a new show.
Oh, do we? We have to, huh?
Just for a minute. but listen, I'm not a hater on Food Network shows for people to do them. I think it has a place. I think it has a place to do stuff like that to promote yourself and use it to build your business and make you stronger. However, you can't go on a show like this and think that, oh, I've made it. Now they're all going to call me, because trust me, they don't.
No, absolutely not. You know, I've done, I did Cooks versus Cons, and then I've done one more Food Network appearance. It's yet to air.
Can you say what it was?
Truth be told, I probably won't. I can't. Not yet. It's one yourself? That you've done. Okay. No, I can't.
All right. Cool. I got you.
It's one that you've done. It's going to air, and they said 6 to 12 months after the filming.
It
was a good experience.
It's a fucking farm.
But you know, Cooks versus Cons was my first foray into Food Network, and I don't remember what the fuck I was. I think I was applying for Beat Bobby Flay and applied through the production company JS Casting, and this show hit me up, and they're a brand new show. I actually I was on the premiere episode, season one, episode one, I did it because I did it because I wanted to see where I stood against my peers. You know, on a national level, I do a lot of stuff in Colorado, and I've cooked with a lot of chefs here in Colorado. But every chef wants to, you know, just like when you walk into a room with a group of chefs, everybody's got that first initial dick measuring contest. You got to get out of the way. I wanted to see where I stood on a national level. So I went and did that show, and, you know, it was a great experience. It by no means defines me as a chef. It is not the highlight of my career. I did some good food on there, and, you know, it was a cool experience. I got to fucking hang out with some really cool people, you know, the fellow contestants that were on that show, and then the judges panel that I had, man. The host of that show is Jeffrey Zakarian. Jeffrey Zakarian walks into the room, and anybody that knows anything about food immediately gets a fucking hard on, you know, and this guy is the coolest motherfucker I have ever met in my life. The guy was great. He was
cool,
down to earth. Oh, he was so fucking humble and talkative and talking about food and asking questions. And, you know, on downtime when we weren't filming, talking to us just like one of the guys. I mean, it's like, he's just a fellow cook. And, you know, experiences like that, you know, whatever you can take away from the show. Fortunately, you know, I was, I did very well on the show. I did win that episode.
You won.
I did. I won the premiere. Yeah. That's what bought the motorcycle I just wrecked. But
That's nice. You know what? It's funny. I tell everybody we do these shows, and you actually win. I mean, you're talking. You may record it a year before it even airs, and then you won't get paid from it till 6 months after it airs. They're hoping to God you get hit by a bus. They don't have to pay you.
Oh, you ain't fucking kidding. You know, Cooks vs. Toms was actually one of the faster ones. I filmed that one in, I think, January.
Right.
And it aired in March. And you're right, I won, and I don't think I got paid for, 6 months.
It's fucking crazy, right?
Yeah. You know, the check comes in the mail, and you're like, what the fuck is this? You almost forget so much time has passed. Right. But, you know, it's the Food Network's a fucking machine, man. I mean, you know, growing up and getting into the industry, you watch people on Food Network and you're like, oh, man, one day I might be able to do that. And then now you get to the point where you and I are in our careers and, fuck, everybody we know has been on Food Network. It's just something you do.
Exactly. You know, I did a show, I did Cutthroat Kitchen a little while ago and it aired. And one of the guys that was on the show with me, it was his first time ever doing anything with TV. He acted like he thought it was his big break. He was like, I've made it now. This is going to be amazing. They're going to call me. And I was like, dude, look, this is like my ninth time on the network. I'm not being a dick. No one's going to give a fuck about you after tomorrow. I'm not being a dick.
No, well,
that's how it goes.
You know, the funny thing, here's something to just hammer that point home. So I did Cooks versus Toms, and Jeffrey Zakarian is the host, and my judges, they have different judges on every episode of that show, but my judges were Daphne Oz, who I had no idea who the hell she was when I walked in the door. Super sweet lady, love her to death, she was great. And Graham Elliott.
Okay.
And Graham Elliott's a badass. But, so first round, we have to make hamburgers with secret ingredient, they give us cereal. And that went well. I made it into the second round. We get to do whatever signature dish we want. No, we had to use cereal. We had a couple of people make some fucking tempura batter, onion rings. I ground up cornflakes and made a Parisian gnocchi with cornflakes instead of flour. Made it to the second round. Get to cook whatever you want. And the secret ingredient they gave us was tropical fruit. So I did a dish that, you know, is something that speaks to how I cook. I did Korean beef bulgogi with some coconut grits turned into, a porridge. And I made some pineapple kimchi. And that's a dish that,
ballsy,
you know, is in my repertoire. It's in my repertoire.
Ballsy.
But the funny thing is, to your point about they don't remember and this isn't your big break, is back in 2012 or 2013, I opened a restaurant here in Colorado and ended up going to Shamrock, a large food purveyor's food show, expo, where they had a competition. And I competed. They took recipes from like 5,000 customers and selected the top three, and I was one of the top three that got selected. And I won that competition as well. I won that one also. And the celebrity chef that was the judge of that competition was Graham Elliott.
No shit. Did he recognize you?
And No, and this is why I'm making your point here, is the dish that I won that show with was Korean beef with pickled onions and sriracha foam. It was, obviously the dish had evolved throughout the years, but it was the same dish with the same cook and the same celebrity chef judge. I don't fucking remember. It's, you know, they're there, they're punching the clock, doing the job just like anybody else, and when it's over, it's over. It's not your big break. It doesn't make you fucking chef of the world. Obviously, you can do things to help brand yourself and build your brand and market yourself to, you know, see an influx in business and use it to your advantage. But that's really where the work comes in. It's not getting onto these shows and doing well. It's what you do with it after the fact. And you know, not relying on that to make you, you know, the best fucking chef in your area. You still got to cook. You don't spend time wearing $4,000 suits and Gucci fucking shoes because you did a Food Network show. You know, I'm wearing Carhartt fucking shorts and a Dickies t-shirt right now that I paid for long before the fucking show aired.
There you go. There you go.
It doesn't make you a celebrity.
No, 100%. You're absolutely right. And, you know, I say the same thing about Guy's Grocery Games, man. I won season 1, episode 2 of that. I won. people give Guy Fieri a lot of shit. They don't like him. But let me tell you something.
I think he's a douchebag, but I've never met him.
Yeah, well, I did too. I was on set with him for 14 hours that day because I won. And let me tell you something. That motherfucker, dude, he's a cook. He's a fucking cook. He was all up into my shit talking about what I'm doing and tasting food and like, but humbly into what I'm doing, not being a douche, like, and not even cameras not rolling, nothing. Like, and then it became a whole game where he and I are trying to one up each other on dick jokes across the set. It was fucking hysterical. I became a Guy Fieri fan for that. Make no mistake about it, he can fucking cook, dude.
Well, you know, that's one of the things is I think if you watch my episode, I was very quiet. I didn't get very theatrical. You know, I think one of the things that we all need to remember is that they create this brand for these people, and it's a brand that they have to personify. And what we see on TV a lot of times is not what you get.
Mm-mm. You're right.
You know, they're real people just like you and I, and they've got the same interests that we have. They just have a job to do.
Yeah, and, you know, even the judges. I mean, the judges are going there. They're getting paid between $2,000 and $7,000 per spot when they go do a judging event for that.
Are you serious? They do it.
Yeah, bro. Yeah, bro. I mean,
holy shit.
Between $2,000 and $7,000 per episode, and sometimes they do two episodes a day, so they're going to make $14,000 in a day. It's
well, fuck, I don't want to compete on anymore. I just want to judge them.
Yeah. Well, check it out, my friend. We got 9 minutes left, and I could keep talking to you until 1 in the morning about food. This could just go on forever. If we were at a bar, we would definitely close it down. But I want to play a quick game with you called What Did We Learn? We're basically on the show tonight through all the conversations. We damn sure learned something from each other. And I want to do it three for me and three for you. Like, what did you learn? You ready?
All right.
It doesn't have to be serious. It could be nonsense. So, I want to see what we got. And what did we learn tonight? It's been brought to you by our good friends at Ergo Chef Knives. Their knives are smarter than your knives. Let me tell you what. These are my favorite knives in the world. My friends over at Ergo Chef. Make sure you check out ErgoChef.com. They make fantastic knives. That's not bullshit. I actually use their knives every day. And let me tell you something. That's a whole other story, Chef. I can tell you all about why I do it, but it's awesome. Tonight,
we'll have to talk about that.
Yeah. Oh, dude. They're good stuff. I learned tonight that my friend, Chef Mark Henry, the meat man, the charcuterie king of Colorado, is a fan of tropical fruit.
Tonight, I learned that Chef Plum is not a fan of preventative maintenance on his vehicles.
Fuck yeah. That's true. That's very, very true. That's very true. Hey, tonight, I also learned that doing two backflips off a motorcycle, you still can land back on the motorcycle.
Fucking A. Living proof. tonight I learned that Chef's Taste Challenge 2017 might make a drastic improvement with the new MC of my man, Chef Plum.
Oh, shit. That's what I'm talking about. That's what I'm talking about. There you go. Hey, I learned tonight that I need to make a trip over to Colorado and hang out at Chef Brother Luck Street Eats because there's two very, very cool fucking motherfuckers over there who are making some amazing food and changing the entire food scene in Colorado.
All right, all right. I appreciate that. Tonight, let's see. What else did I learn?
Last one. Come on, man. You can do it.
Last one. Tonight, I learned that Chef Plum actually appreciates food, not just raw, like he so often does, but also cooked, like Guy Fieri, who is a fellow cook.
Damn right. Guy Fieri is a cook. That's, let me tell you something. That dude is all
hey,
right.
Hey, I got to tell the backstory there. I've been bullshitting about this for weeks, and I did it on my post today. So real quick, New Orleans, working right across from Chef Plum on a prep table there. This dude spent 8 hours prepping a dish and didn't cook a goddamn thing. So I've been busting his balls about it ever since we were in New Orleans. He smoked mangoes probably 50 fucking times. I didn't taste an ounce of smoke in them. And he cleaned fish for 8 hours and didn't cook a fucking thing.
Poor shit. It's all fucking
But we
garbage.
Still love
it's
him. It's all good. It's all good.
It's all nonsense.
And the judges still didn't know what it was.
Hey, look here. You got to pat me on the back a little bit here. Them motherfuckers looking for mayo. I fucking first thing that morning, I made mayonnaise for 300 people from scratch.
Out of pecans. Yeah, that was good.
You know what I'm saying?
That shit tasted good, too.
I made fucking mayo, and that other dude was like, hey, we got any mayo? I was like, I made some. Do you want some? Come on, bitches. That's what's up.
You got a citrus juicer?
No.
How about this? You got any pigeons in the fucking kitchen?
Oh, Christ. That's another story itself right there. We got 5 minutes and 45 seconds. I'm going to do the outro with you on the horn with me here, Chef, because that's the way it goes. And, dude, I wish you a speedy recovery. I feel terrible what happened to you, but I'm glad that you're on the up and up. There's such a positive outlook on it, bro. You're an amazing chef. You're an even better person. And thank you for coming on tonight and talking to us, man. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, man. Well, thanks for having me. I always love bullshitting with my man, Plum. Let's do this again sometime soon.
You have an open door whenever the fuck you want. We're here every Monday night. You got an open door. Check it out. You can follow my man, Chef Mark, on them Instagrams at Mark E. Henry on Instagram. Just type in Chef Mark Henry. He comes up. And, of course, check out, of course, Brother Lux Street Eats out in Colorado. These guys are killing it, making some amazing food. Great food, even better people. To me, there's nothing better than that. There's just nothing better than that, in my opinion. If you're going to make great food, be a good person. And that's what these guys are. And make sure you support them. And, Chef, I hope that you have a speedy recovery. I look forward to you getting back in the kitchen and seeing some more pictures of what you've got going on over there at Brother Lux Street Eats. And, hey, look forward to that Food Network appearance coming up. Let me know, man. We'll promote the fuck out of it for you.
Yeah, sounds good, man. I'll let you know when it gets closer, and I'm allowed to talk about it without getting my nuts sued off.
Yeah, they won't really do that. They just try to fucking scare you, trust me. They don't fucking know what they're talking about. That's what's up. And guys,
Can sue me, but it's half of nothing is nothing.
It's still nothing, right? Zero is half and still zero. That's all it is. You can follow me on them Twitter and on them Instagrams at chef_plum. And don't forget to check out Edible Nutmeg on the Road, Edible Long Island on the Road, Edible East End on the Road. And hey, guess what's coming up, Chef? We got Edible Manhattan and Edible Brooklyn coming up here soon. Hey, you know what? 2017, I'm trying to get Edible Colorado. I know you got one out there. I'll find it and we'll do it. That's what's up.
Yeah, let's do it. Come on out.
No doubt. Ladies and gentlemen, please remember, food is one of the most important things that we have in life. Everything important in life happens around food. Let's make sure we give it the time it deserves. Give it the time it deserves, no doubt. And please, don't forget, check out my man, the one and only Chef Mark Henry. Chef, thank you very much for your time this evening, and I'll catch you guys on down the road.
All right, brother.
To pay. There's a price to pay. Time for you to get down on your knees.